I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. All right, welcome back to Doubting Dogma. This is Molly Ann Mormon, and this is episode 17, most likely. Good times. Riz, unfortunately, can't join us today, but instead, I've got someone else. And, you know, he's got a couple little shows. Maybe you've heard of him, the Scathing Atheist. Welcome, Noah.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Molly. I got to say, for in Riz's defense, she's on, what, now four podcasts? I mean, who could handle being on four entire podcasts? It's got to be... Yeah, so
I know,
you know,
it's got to be crazy because you get, well, that and she's taken a little holiday, as they say in England, and she's over there, I think she went to Washington for a bit, so she's just out having some fun, and yeah, I so envy her, but...
I just got back from vacation. I'm actually in that weird position where, I'll, like 4 or 5 days after vacation where you're thinking to yourself, man, I'm glad I'm not on vacation. And it's the only time you ever think that to yourself. I'm in that weird space right now.
Yeah, I just took a week off last week and we didn't go anywhere. I just stayed home, hung out in my hammock in the backyard, just relaxed and, you know, did little nonsensical stuff at the fair, and it was good times, so...
Yeah, I spent 100 plus a night staying in a hotel wishing that I was at home in the hammock, so yeah, good call. Well done.
Yeah, we were going to go to my family reunion in Utah, but Ooh. Didn't have the money for, you know, $700 plus dollars per plane ticket, you know, each, so...
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an awful lot of money to spend to be in Utah at the end of it, you know?
Yeah, and oh my gosh. It's some beautiful country over there. But even when I was in the church and active and everything, I was never like, I want to move to Utah. No, I was never that way. And when I was still single, my dad actually suggested that I move to Utah to, you know, find a husband. And I was like, no, I'm good. I just, no.
Yeah, that seems like the right answer. You know, I got to say, I've never been to Utah. I'm actually going to be there in October. October 1st, we've got a live record of God Awful Movies in Salt Lake City, which is apparently during whatever the twice annual
yes,
huge Mormon conference.
The semi-annual general conference. Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Of course you know the name of that. Yeah.
Of course. Well, I spent 35 years in the church, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, wow. I mean, I only turned 36 like a couple months ago, and it was only in December when I sent my letter in. So I've spent a long time in the cult that is the Mormon hoodness ship.
All right, so let me ask you this, because I'm actually a little bit worried about this. I'm not worried about doing the live show, because it's like, you know, it's a theater, you got to pay to be in there. We're not, you know, I don't think we're gonna have a lot of Mormons wandering in going like, God Awful Movies, that sounds great. But we
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Yeah, no. Like, so I'm not concerned about that. But the night before we do our live shows, we do a platinum night with some listeners where we watch the movie that we're going to be breaking down, and we all watch it together, and we sort of roast it, Mystery Science Theater 3000 style, along with, you know, everybody who has a ticket to platinum night, and that's usually done like in a bar or something, and. It, you know, we'll have a private room, but like the waiters and waitresses and whatnot that are going to be taking care of us while we're there, did it is Salt Lake City. So like, you know, should I carry mace? Should I carry like a rape whistle or something?
The whistle probably, but you'll be needing it when Eli's around. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I wish you were though.
See, I don't think you'll have to worry about the Mormons much when you're there, because you got to remember, it's a bar. There's alcohol there, and that's like, that's Mormon mace right there. So if a Mormon comes up, just like start throwing the lousiest beer, you know, I don't know, Bud Light or something at them. And they'll like,
and they'll have to reach I'm melting. Right, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I remember Mitt Romney didn't know how to sit in a bar stool for the debates and stuff like that. Yeah, no, of course. Never saw one of those before, y'all.
What is this strange contraption? Oh, no. So, yeah. Well, first, I just wanted to say that when you were on Matthew Maxon's show, Odd Atheist Friends, he had said that he knew some people that had been deconverted because of Cogdis and because of you guys. And I was sitting there listening, and I had a very Eli Bosnick moment, because I was like, I'm the friend. So.
Wait, yeah, so. I mean, no, I'm sorry. So you started listening to like Cognitive Dissonance in our show when you weren't an atheist, when you were a believer, when you were a Mormon?
Yes, actually, like last year, May 1st is my wedding anniversary, right? And Riss was actually my videographer. Mm-hmm. And after she filmed it and everything, you know, we needed a couple extra copies. And she was like, hey, just, you know, put a couple dollars towards my show. And then I'll send the, you know, the wedding videos and we'll be square. So, you know, so I Patreoned her show, and then I was like, well, if I'm paying for it, I should listen to it. So I was listening to it, and hers wasn't strictly an atheist podcast at the time. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, there was, she didn't make it a secret that she was an atheist, but that wasn't the topic of conversation. They covered all kinds of social issues, and I mean, they still had the little segment called Troper's Lament, where they talked about different movie tropes and that kind of stuff. And then when I finished her back catalog, I was like, I'm out. What do I do next? And then I was like, well, I remember she had mentioned Scathing Atheist. So I turned it on and I listened to an episode, and I was like, it was still too scathy. So, and then, you know, so I texted her, I'm like, what do I do? You know, and she's like, well, Cognitive Dissonance is good. So I started listening to Tom and Cecil. And I mean, the way they break things down, and I know they're not trying to deconvert anybody, but just the no-nonsense of the viewpoint and the way they explain it, I don't know why dick jokes are, like, more explanatory or something. I don't know. But, I mean, the way they broke it all down and everything, it just, I mean, I changed, like, 180 degrees. I was hardcore Republican, you know. I wasn't even going to vote in the last election, because I'm like, well, the one we've got is a scumbag and I hate Hillary, you know, so this kind of stuff. And through all this, you know, it completely turned me around. So then when I finished their back catalog in like 4 months,
wow.
I have a long drive to work.
Apparently, yeah, that's quite, because, yeah, they've been doing like, whatever, an hour and a half at least a week for 6 years now, 7 years?
Wow. I started listening to them when they were around episode 330. They had just gone to the Ark Park when I started listening to them.
And great episode.
So, yeah, that was funny. Oh my gosh, all of the animals were harmed in the making.
we had so many people trying to talk us into doing that. I was so happy when Tom and Cecil did it. I was like, oh guys, they already did. We can't now it would be just silly. It would be like we were just taking their thing. We can't do it now. As much as I wanted to give Ken Ham money and spend an entire afternoon of my life in Kentucky.
oh, shucks, I can't do it now. Yeah. Sorry. You know, I'm so disappointed. But yeah, it was really just, I mean, the way they explained things and everything and the way they laid it all out that I was like, you know, that actually makes a lot of sense. And so, yeah. And then from there, once I finished their back catalog, then I started on Scathing. And I've already finished that back catalog, and I'm like halfway through God Awful Movies, and I'm several episodes deep in Naked Mormonism and Andrew's awesome. Show and all this kind of stuff. So
it's, yeah, once we get you in, we suck you in all the way. That's the goal.
Oh, right? Yeah.
No, but I got to say, you know, there's something so amazingly attractive because I would imagine that your experience is at least somewhat like mine in the fact that, like, until somebody presents, like, skepticism or rationalism as an independent thing, right, every choice that you have has its bullshit. So, like, yeah, you can go with the Mormon level bullshit, but you know there's some bullshit in there, right? You know there's things that don't add up. You know there's things that don't make sense. You can go with the Republican bullshit. Well, you know, some of that stuff doesn't make sense. For me, you know, I ended up going with a lot of the woo and Wicca bullshit, and it was like, ah, this is better bullshit, though, at least. Yeah. But the first time you see that worldview where it's like, no, there's just no bullshit. You know, I'm using the same standard to evaluate everything now. There are no sacred cows. It's just like, damn, that seems relaxing.
Well, and sacred cows are like really tasty with some melty cheese on top. And
I cannot convince Eli of that. Actually, no, he believes, he knows that they're tasty, I guess. I just can't convince him to eat them anyway, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, like, 2 days before my wedding, I mean, this is the kind of stress that the Mormon church has heaped on me. I was completely freaking out, and I was stressed out, and I was up all night, and I was sick and everything, because I was like, my dad is going to ruin my wedding, because I married a pagan, and we had a Wiccan priestess, and we did a hand fasting, and had the circle and the whole thing, you know, and I'm like, my dad, Mr. Part of the Bishopric Mormon guy, is gonna just, oh, he's going to kill me in the middle of my wedding. You know, I was just, oh.
So did he kill you in the middle of the wedding?
No, actually, my brother-in-law, like on Saturday, because the wedding was Sunday, so Saturday, my brother-in-law like sat everybody down, and we basically, it was, oh, they brought up some extra stuff, but they basically had an intervention with Dad. Saying, you know, please just, you know, do you know what the wedding's about, and is this, and, you know, we've got, it has some beautiful symbolism in it and everything. And Dad was a little bit hurt that he thought that I thought that he was gonna, you know, disturb the wedding. And
Oh, right.
I was like, well, Dad has this way of, like, he sits there and he'll, you know, like, he doesn't really say anything, but he can sigh louder than anyone. And then, you know, that draws attention and everything. And so we were just like, oh, please, Dad.
Yeah, we call that pulling a smallie in the industry. So.
That's one show that I haven't listened to.
Right. It's good to know there's another back catalog yet awaiting you, though. So.
Well, and then every week I like to go and listen to the Atheist Experience too, because there is nothing to destroy the Magic Sky Wizard like Matt Dillahunty.
Well, I'll tell you what. I strongly recommend, if you're a fan of that show, go to, like, you know, 6-7 years ago. I think they still have the archives up from 6-7 years ago, and listen to, like, much earlier, because now on that show they primarily get atheist atheist listeners calling in. They get very few Christians, and the Christians that they do get tend to be at least somewhat prepared, or they're going to go down some extraordinarily bizarre, weird little road. But when, you know, when they were on before I got a little bit bigger, and before the atheist community was as much of a thing, and they were on public access in Austin, you would just get random Christian calling in going like, well, I bet they never thought of this one. And man, I'll tell you what, like, watching, like, listening to Matt Dillahunty rip in just like average Texas Christian, is a thing of beauty. You know, like, you know, this is a guy who can take out the best that they have to offer, the best apologists that they've got in the business. And to watch him just take on, you know, Uncle Larry. Oh, so much fun.
You're not the first person who has suggested this. I just haven't got there yet, so.
No, yeah, you know, finish the god-awful movies archive first. Now, by all means, have priorities here. There's some things are more important than others.
Yeah, it's, oh my gosh. And then when you guys had the Mormon month and I went through and I actually rewatched all of those because I remember seeing all of them growing up.
Apparently, we're going to have to watch the, what is it, Saturday Warrior or whatever. We're going to have to watch that one again because they're remaking it now. The musical?
I think they already did.
Oh, God. We're going to have to watch that again. I think,
like, there's the old one, the one that you did with the horrible 80s hair, and it was just filmed with a fog machine on a state center stage in the auditorium, or well, in the cultural hall, which is also the gymnasium. Like, they usually have a stage there when they do, like, the roadshow for the stake, you know? Mm. And so I was like, yeah, this was somebody's project or something.
Yeah, it certainly didn't seem like it was a movie going on there. Yeah, but, oh, yeah, no, those were some of the worst. The thing is, you know, I really like when we find movies that bring, because I grew up in South Georgia surrounded by Baptists. So, right, like if Pentecostals, if snake handlers and tongue speakers made movies, I would, you know, I'm already steeped in that stuff. I know that kind of stuff, right? So I know most of the evangelical type stuff. But when you get into like the Mormon tropes, or even like we've done a couple of Muslim movies and stuff like that, when you get into some of the religions you're less familiar with and you just get that, like, that outsider's taste of just how fucking crazy this stuff really is, you know, that makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah, I watched one of those Muslim movies. It was one of the ones soon after the after your Mormon month there, and it was the real short one. It was like only an hour long or 55 minutes or something like that. One of the little apocalyptic ones where all they did was, "Hey, bro, ha ha ha," you know.
Yeah, the day the sun rises in the west.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh, it was so horrible.
The green screening on that was a thing of beauty. I don't think there was a movie we did called Miracle Man that might have competed with that for green screening. But actually, you know, I'm so excited. Like, you know, you'll find out before everybody else because we don't announce it until the God Awful Movies episode on Tuesday. But the not this coming week, but the following week, we're doing a Hindu cartoon movie. So this will be our first Hindu movie. That'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, that will be quite interesting.
Yeah, it should be an interesting new road to take.
Wow. I can't even imagine. I don't know enough about the Hinduism to even imagine the levels of crazy that's going to be buried in the depths of that thing. But,
well, and that's going to be what's so fun about it, right? Because, like, when you watch, if you just imagine there's a man from Mars and he doesn't know anything at all about human culture, except for somehow you share a spoken language, and you have to explain to him any religion. Right. They're all going to sound so batshit crazy to this guy without any cultural points of reference. But when you grow up for 35 years in the Mormon church, that bullshit is kind of insulated. You have to stop and think to yourself, yeah, it doesn't make any fucking sense that he would have done that, does it? You know, just like so many Christians have never really realized what a bloodthirsty son of a bitch their God actually is until an atheist points it out to him. And they're like, yeah, that's not, man, boy, gee, if just some dude did that, I'd consider him the most evil human being in all of history, wouldn't I? So, yeah, when you get these just sort of like brand new glimpses, I know a little bit about the Hindu faith, but not much. So all of the little tropes and immoral messages and stuff are going to be brand new to me on that. So super excited.
That's going to be, yeah, that's going to be fun. I look forward to hearing that episode. But, all right, so I know that you have made brief mentions of this and Scathing Atheist and that kind of stuff, because you said that your dad was Mormon-ish.
Mm-hmm. Ish.
So, yeah. And I can't even, because I grew up in such a fundamental house as far as Mormonism goes, I can't even imagine, like, having just one parent in who's only sort of. So, I mean, what was that like? Did he actually go to church or anything? Because I know you also said he was a police officer. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I know personally how the shift work interferes with schedules like that. So did he ever go to church, or did he just like Jack Mormon it, or what?
Yeah, there was no church going in our house or anything like that. It was we were as religious as the grandparents we were about to go see, right? So my mother's family was Catholic, my dad's family was Mormon. And so the agreement was basically like, all right, kids, you don't have to go to church or any of that kind of stuff. But when you're at grandma's house, you have to pretend you're a Mormon. And when you're at other grandma's house, you have to pretend that you're a Catholic.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm exaggerating it a little bit. It wasn't quite that bad, but like, yeah. but both of them wanted to think that, you know, the kids were being raised with religion. And my mother, bless her heart, she went to Catholic schools and she's still Christian. She's still convinced I'm going to see the light one of these days. But she valued free thought more than she valued her faith. So she was very adamant about not letting her kids go to church, not just not forcing them to, but not letting them go to church. And I know a lot of atheists say, well, that's a terrible idea. You should at least let them make up their minds for themselves. I strongly disagree, right? I don't think a kid is able to make up their mind about whether they want to be told true stuff or bullshit. You know, you wouldn't let your kid decide whether they wanted to go to real school or conspiracy theory school, you know? So, you know, I think that's probably the right decision to make with a kid, unless whatever, they're obsessed or they're surrounded by it and you want to at least inoculate them from it a little bit. So then you go to church with them and, you know, have that. Yeah. Now, what did we learn? God seems like a pretty mean dude kind of conversation with them, right? So I went to the only times I really wound up in a church as a kid, at least until I was like 13, 14, was if grandma had to keep us, you know, me and my siblings on Saturday night. Right. So I went to a Mormon church twice and a Catholic church once growing up, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
The Mormon church, by the way, was better than the Catholic church for whatever it's worth. The Catholic church service was so insanely boring and calisthenic and hard to follow. Basically, the Mormons just took us down into a little room and sang silly songs and stuff and had little pinups about monsters that would come and eat us if we lied or something like that. But it was much less threatening than the Catholic one.
I had that lesson.
There you go.
No, I remember one where, you know, because they have this, like, it's like a felt board, and then they've mm-hmm. got these little cutouts that have, I don't know, almost like a super duper fine grained sandpaper on the back, so it just sticks to the felt that can put it up there.
Yep.
And there was one, and it's like, they just put up, you know, the little figure of the kid, you know, and then they've got like these black tentacles, and these are the lies that they're telling.
Yes!
And they put it up.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of when I said that. That's exactly it. That it was a little, turned into a little octopus demon by the end of it. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yes,
no.
I remember that indoctrination.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well,
yeah.
It's nice to know they scared the kids equally across the U.S.
yeah, that, they were using that same one in Michigan, apparently. Yeah, but see, now with the Catholics, it was like there was, because that was at least somewhat cartoony. You know, you felt like you were being scared, but you were being scared the way people scare kids. Now, and I should say to your younger listeners, by the way, that, you know, I grew up in the age of, like, you know, when I was a kid, I was watching Gene Wilder's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like, watch that movie again. That is a creepy fucking movie, right? There's some demonic shit going on there. And I'm not just talking about the fact that he keeps killing children, like, kind of willy-nilly in a factory accident. But also there's, like, the part where they go on the little boat and there's, like, pictures of worms crawling out of the mouths of corpses and shit.
Oh,
this is something that they're giving to
children.
I might be like slightly exaggerating, but it's just some really disturbing shit on screen at that point where like you can't imagine somebody doing that to kids now, but it's like, you know, back then we just had them sleeping on the back window of the car as we drove on the interstate. We didn't really care too much about how much concrete was below their unprotected skulls while they were on the swings.
Yeah. We still had the merry-go-rounds on the freaking playground.
Yeah, right. They were designed to launch you off with maximum centripetal force and shit.
They were awesome. I miss those.
Oh, God. Even as a kid, that made me sick, but I still couldn't stop doing it, you know?
I know.
Well, you know, that's what I think. I look at the millennial generation. They've been so maligned with all the snowflake bullshit and everything. And I think to myself, it's not that the millennial generation is unreasonable. It's that our generation was so bass-ackwards and, you know, so filled with like, no, kids, go ride around on bikes in traffic with no helmets. Have at it. Have fun. Take off the training wheel. Stop being a pussy about this. That was sort of like my generation grew up like that. And now we see like, oh, God damn it. It's reasonable now. Fuck these people. They don't deserve reasonable. I didn't get reasonable.
I thought my mom was being completely unreasonable by telling us that we needed to get headlights for our bikes so that we could be seen, you know?
Yeah, no, I disconnected mine when I got away from home because I was like, yeah, hell with that. That's dorky. Headlight.
I know. Yeah, never use the helmet ever.
No. No, I mean, because look when I was growing up, if you had a helmet, it was because you had a problem. You know, you had to have a helmet on because you were going to smash your head against stuff intentionally. So, you know, and I don't disagree. I think people should probably definitely like wear helmets and stuff. I think that should be the standard for kids. But, you know, like I said, you know, I grew up in a world that really did not seem to care too much about the integrity of my skull. So it still seems weird to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they still had tackle football for the little tiny kids. I don't know if they still do, but
we had fucking lawn darts. You remember lawn darts?
Right?
Yeah, so, like, yeah, no, clearly they were trying to wean us. Like, they were like, yeah, let's get rid of the dumb ones.
Well, yeah, you know, because...
And by the way, just...
then they were talking about there was overpopulation and stuff, so, you know.
Yeah, thank God for GMOs, or that really would have become a problem. And just in case there's anyone listening that doesn't know what a lawn dart is, it's a giant metal spike that you heave as high as you can in the air and try to get to land very close to you. And it's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it's heavy. It's heavy enough to impale your skull and kill you. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's what you did with this toy.
Oh, I miss those days. Yeah, I may be slightly touched in the head, but I'm going to blame that on religion just because I can. So.
Well, there you go. I'm sure they'll be happy to take credit.
They don't know, and I'm not going to tell them, at least as far as my family goes. But, okay, so you said you have siblings? How many?
I have two sisters and one brother.
Okay.
A Catholic, a Wiccan, and a atheist. Guess which one has the PhD? I say that because I know that only one of my siblings would ever listen to a show that I'm on, and she's the one with the PhD and the fellow atheist. So I can say that without like making it awkward for the other two. They're never going to hear this.
Most people are never going to hear this. But
well, there you go. Just if you have Eli on, don't tell him that or he'll start ranking races on you or something.
Oh, no. I don't think I am equipped for an Eli prank war, so let's not get that started.
By all means. Yeah, no, that's the wise decision.
Yeah, so how did you guys meet Andrew? I'm just... because I know he used to come on the show and he'd do little bits of legal and stuff here and there, but... I mean, how did that all start? It was just, what, he reached out to you guys because he was just a fan or something, wasn't he?
Well, it wasn't exactly that. He was on, I believe he first reached out to Thomas. He was a fan of Atheistically Speaking. Well, then it was Atheistically Speaking. Now it's Serious Inquiries Only. And he was a big fan of that show. And you know, I guess Thomas had opined on some legal topic, and he said, hey, you know, like, you're on the right track, but I could really help you kind of work your way through that if you'd ever like to have, you know, a lawyer on the show to talk. And of course, you know, Thomas is no idiot. He's like, yep, tomorrow. Sure. Exactly. Now. So he had Andrew on. And so Eli and I had both heard him on Thomas's show, and he did a whole bit on Scalia and what a miserable fuck Scalia was. I couldn't have rah-rah-rahed it more. But we ran into each other. He was already a fan of scathing and god-awful movies. We ran into him at the Reason Rally in D.C., and just, you know, really hit it off right away. He was, you know, obviously you don't have to talk to Andrew very long to figure out that you're dealing with a real smart cookie. You know, he's a super compassionate guy. And, you know, we met him. He was with his son, and his son's a pretty cool kid and everything. So just made a great impression. We ended up hanging out a couple of times in D.C. And very shortly after, we realized that, you know, our show had sort of been growing for a couple of years, and we realized that, like, you know, holy crap, this is like a real company now. We need to draw up real company papers and stuff like that. So we reached out to the lawyer we knew, and we got to talking to him, and he says, you know, hey, you know, do you guys mind a little bit of free advice? I got some ideas on other ways that you could maybe monetize this, et cetera, et cetera. And within a couple of days of conversing with him, we were all getting together like, man, you know, they kind of would like this guy to be a full-time part of our thing, you know, because obviously, you know, our experience is all in the entertainment world. None of us, I mean, Heath has a bit of experience in the business world and the finance world, but most of us we just bring, you know, we know how to write dick jokes. That's what got us there. And so, like, you know, Andrew started off sort of as somebody that we could bounce ideas off of from a business end, that understood that end of the world a little bit better, and then just quickly became a friend that, you know, is a hilarious contributor to the show, and just a personal friend as well as sort of a business partner. But yeah, it all started with a sort of a chance meeting, and hey, can you sign this? I think I can't remember what it was, but he was carrying around something that he was having people sign at Reason Rally.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I wanted to go to this last year's Reason Con, but just couldn't make that happen. So I was, I look forward to next year. Or do they do them every two or something? But anyways, the next one.
I think they're going to do another one next year. They've been doing them annually, but I think they took the year off for the Reason Rally, the year of the Reason Rally. A lot of the main conferences sort of drop off for that one, because that one, at least the first time they did it, was huge, and you know, nobody really wanted to cannibalize, you know, because obviously if we can only go to one, let's go to the one in D.C. where all of our elected representatives can see that there are atheists out there that vote and show up at stuff and yell and get rowdy. So
yeah.
But I believe they're doing one next year as well.
I can't wait. I so want to go. But, okay, so right now you guys are actually reading the Book of Mormon.
We are.
I love the Mormon Peace Theaters. And how has that been? Has Lucinda, like, decided to, you know, has she made you sleep on the couch? Like, every time you have to do a record for that or what?
Well, you know, it's all a matter of relativity, right? Einstein had this all figured out. If you want to read the Book of Mormon and enjoy yourself, read the Quran first. I mean, you know, because as bad as the Book of Mormon is, at least there are, you know, there are characters. There is at least sort of the vague outline of a story now and again. It's confused. It's convoluted. It's anachronistic. It's ridiculous. It's silly. It's repetitive. But at least it's not just, you know, Muhammad going, and you know who else I don't much care for 350 pages or whatever it was. So as bad as the Book of Mormon is, after reading the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Quran, it's just like, yeah, that's all right. That's okay. It's like when my wife tried to talk me into reading Twilight, you know?
Oh, you read that?
No, I didn't. I started to. Oh. And I'm like, no, I can't do it, baby. I love you. I love you a lot, but I can't. I love the English language too much to make it through this.
Yeah,
That's Mormon too, isn't it?
Yeah, she actually is. Stephanie Meyer, I think it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Myers.
Yeah, from what I understand, if you know the Mormon mythology, you can. Now, I don't know. I can't remember what my source is on this, because this might be complete like conspiracy bullshit or whatever. But my understanding is that you can kind of pluck out the Mormon mythology and stuff from it if you know enough Mormon mythology going into it. And I know the whole story cultivates in an anti-abortion message of some sort. So, my wife was quite disappointed by the time she reached the end of that series. But.
I never read it because I didn't care to, and I still don't.
Because you like, if you're going to consume words, you're going to consume good ones. No, I get it.
Yeah, no, recently it's been, I mean, I've got this stack of books because I feel like I've been cheated with my education because, you know, evolution, you don't talk about evolution mm-hmm. and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, when I started this whole process, like, I mean, I picked up Women Beyond Belief by Karen Garst because they Cogdis had her on, and I was like, oh, that sounds like an interesting book, I think I'll pick it up, you know. So so I read that and I was like, well, that's interesting. And then, you know, I read Deconverted by Seth Andrews, and Riss lent me Diatribes volume 1, and so I read that before I listened to your show.
Oh, right. So, on.
And you know, then I picked up God Is Not Great and The End of Faith and The God Delusion and Breaking the Spell. So I had all four horsemen covered, and I picked up The Origin of Species, and I was just completely fascinated by it. You know, so I've got all these books that I'm trying to get through, and I'm like, I don't have enough time to cram the knowledge into my face, you know? It's just
right. Too- well, you know, and I'll tell you what, I feel the exact same way every day. That, because I think about all the time, again, it wasn't Christianity for me, right? Like, I got out of that like pretty early on and never was really indoctrinated. Like, if you don't go to church as a kid, you're never going to really be Christian, or generally speaking, you're not.
Not hardcore.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, exactly. You're always going to take it with a grain of salt. You might marry somebody who's super religious and go to church and play along or whatever. But for me, it was all the woo and the conspiracy theory nonsense and the Wicca and the tarot cards and astrology and all of this. And I spent a lot of years of my life, from probably about the time I graduated from college to about the time I was like 28, 29 years old, really doing deep dives on this stuff, right? Learning a lot about it, reading, you know, books spanned over like 100 years of understanding of this inane piece of nonsense that's being perpetuated through the world. So like, I have this huge chunk of my brain that was dedicated to absolute and utter bullshit, and I'm trying to crowd it out now. Right. Like, ever since then, I've been like consuming, like just voraciously consuming all the true stuff that I can, just to try to crowd out all the other shit. So the thing I know most about when I die isn't going to be tarot cards.
Yeah, tarot cards was not something I ever got.
Oh, no, that's of the devil. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Like that and Ouija boards. Oh, my
Ouija boards. Also, Battleship. Battleship will fuck you right up. I remember there was this girl I had a crush on in high school, and she and I told her I read palms, and she's like, oh, read my palm. And, you know, I got to touch her, so of course I did. And as I'm doing this, she starts off by saying, like, you know, my pastor says this is all of the devil, but I don't know. And then I'm like, I so don't have a crush on you anymore. That boy, did you just cure that. I'll finish the palm thing because I don't want to be rude, but Jesus.
Yeah, I can list off all the devil stuff, you know, the tarot and the psychic stuff and the, oh, well, you know, of course, stuff like rock music and heavy metal and, you know, again, the Ouija board, Dungeons and Dragons, like any of this RPG Dungeons stuff, you know.
Right. They freaked right out about that, didn't they?
Oh, my gosh. I remember Mom and Dad and them telling us that, you know, well, because kids aren't supposed to be playing this because then they're going to actually start believing that they are a wizard and that they do have these powers and this kind of stuff. And, you know, I didn't understand this because I didn't even know what it was. So, you know, okay, you know.
See, like, that can so easily backfire, though, right? Because to me, my childhood, now, like I said, I was sort of peripherally religious. Like, the people around me were giving me religious messages and stuff, but I didn't have, like, a religious authority to go to with my questions and stuff. And what I got was very much that same message, right? That, like, if you played Dungeons and Dragons, right? And of course, I grew up during the Satanic Panic, right? So, like, if you played Dungeons and Dragons, or you played these particular video games, or you listened to this type of music or whatever, you would invite the devil in. But it always seemed like they were saying that, like, you would also get superpowers, right? I mean, was that just me? They acted like magic was a real thing that you could learn. And then they're like, but don't do it because the devil. And I'm like, you just told me I could have fucking superpowers and then not to do it?
Well, yeah, you know, the witchcrafts and the and the sorcery, that was a real thing, but it was all of the devil.
And I'm just thinking, like, if that's true, though, then the devil is the place to be. I mean, God doesn't give you that kind of shit. He just lets your kid die of cancer. I mean, yeah, Satan might demand him as a sacrifice, but, you know, I mean, one way or the other, the kid's dead, you know, who cares? Yeah, no, sorry, you can't say that, because you never know when you're talking to a parent. But yeah, but that always struck me as, like, such a bizarre way to try to sell it. And then, of course, you go to the rationalists, and they're like, no, it's just all bullshit, man. And you're like, oh, God, that's so much easier to get my head around. Thank you.
Yeah, and I remember, I think it was one of my seminary teachers said, you know, like, other churches, you know, because all the other churches are false, right? Mm-hmm. When you grow up Mormon, all the others are just wrong, and they're all slightly, at least, influenced by the devil because he led them astray and stuff. And they may think that they've got some truth, and they may think that they have these, you know, gifts of, like, healing and stuff, but they don't. And so she gave this example of, like, someone had broken their leg and they went to someone who was outside the church, and they gave them their version of a blessing and felt like they were supposedly healed. But then, like, the bishop or stake president said that he saw two little demons inside this dude's leg holding the bones together, right?
Boy, did this story just get way more insane. I mean, not that it wasn't already insane. I mean, we're talking about blessing a broken leg, but really? Like, on an x-ray? Like, he looked in there with, like a God scope?
I guess. And then, like, supposedly, I don't know, this stake president or whoever he was, like, cast out the demons. The dude's leg was broken again, and then they had to send him to the hospital to get his leg set by, science? And...
I'm just picturing these two demons walking on either side, holding up. One's holding the higher part. One's like, no demons over here, man. Nothing going. This guy is just a walking. I'm trying to figure out the logistics. Like, cause are the demons, are they little tiny bone sized demons? Or are they just regular?
I don't know. I always envisioned them. Like, I don't know if you ever saw the cartoon Anastasia from way back when I was a kid, but, like, there were these little, I don't know, well, they were little green flying demons that Rasputin had, you know, and like, that's how I always pictured these little broken leg demons when I heard this story, where they were just these little tiny demons, like, holding the leg together, and I'm like,
I guess there's so no non-silly way
with me.
right it's not like there's one way. Like, if we could go to that particular state president or whatever the hell, and we could ask him, what did you have in mind, it's not like there's some way he could say it where we were going, oh no, okay, that makes sense. I could see how the demons could hold his bones together like that. Okay, all right. So,
you know, it makes me wonder, you know, was he breaking the word of wisdom and, like, hitting up the absinthe or something, and he's seeing the green fairies? I don't know. But
the Joseph Smith entheogen theory rises once again.
Well, you know, he stuck his face in a hat. I mean, what can you do?
Well, look, I mean, the thing is, you know, I had Bryce Blankenagel on the show just the other day, and we were talking, I can't remember, honestly, if this happened during the interview or afterwards or beforehand, but we were talking about, it's like, if If anyone you knew came to you and started telling you about visions they had, a la the visions that Joseph Smith had, your first thought would be, so you ate some mushrooms? You left out the part where you ate a bunch of mushrooms there? So, yeah, it doesn't seem like that crazy a theory.
Yeah, mushrooms, or we were wondering, like, maybe peyote when, when I had Bryce on the show. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I mean, I had seen the South Park episode, but I always thought they were just exaggerating, like with the hat. Because I had all my coworkers and stuff that knew I was Mormon. They're like, so was it really like that? You know, and I'm like, well, you know, they got most of it, but, you know, he didn't stick his face in a hat. And then I started listening to Bryce's show. And
stuck his face in it.
Like, he did stick his face in a hat.
Well, that's what I love so much about Bryce's show, right, is that, like, no matter how crazy you think it is, it's crazier. Like, any little thing, like just take the little seer stone that he had in the hat, right? So I remember listening to an early episode of Bryce's show where he was talking about how he got that seer stone, and apparently he stole it from someone, and there was, like, a big thing about the person he had taken that stone from wanting it back once he started saying it had magic powers and shit. So it's like, even the thing with which he perpetrated the bullshit had a bullshit backstory, right? It's like, yeah, every layer that you go into with Mormonism, it's like, oh my God, it's even crazier.
Yeah. And when Bryce was on the show, he told us, like, I guess Joseph Smith actually used to oil that rock so it was all shiny.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be just super shiny. So then when he stuck it in his hat, it would, you know, reflect a tiny bit of light that.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, breathing probably some crazy weird fumes while he's in there now, too, yeah. No, but I'll tell you, now, have you actually read the Book of Mormon, or is, because I don't know if Mormonism is like, okay, I didn't know if Mormonism was like Christianity, where, like, you just, like, you know, you go to the end and click, I agree, or whatever. But
no, they are, like, hardcore about reading your scriptures, and, I mean, yeah, they encourage you to read the Bible, too, but, I mean, where the focus really is the Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I still have my mom calling me up, you know, because she feels like she's such a terrible parent because two of my sisters have left the church, you know, not for reason or anything. One thinks that the church has strayed from Joseph Smith's teaching, so needs to go back to that. And the other has decided she wants to pursue Messianic Judaism. So I'm like, yeah, because the Mormon church wasn't misogynistic enough. I just don't understand. But yeah, they're very, they stress the reading the scriptures a lot. So mom calls me up and she's like, are you reading your scriptures and praying? You know, and since I have left the church, like, I actually started reading my Book of Mormon again because I was like, I want to look at it with the new perspective. Mm-hmm. I want to, like, actually see the crazy for what it is. Yeah. Wow. So now at least, you know, if mom asks, I won't be lying anymore.
Yeah, there you go. I not and praying, but I have been.
Well, yeah, we skipped that part, but.
So now we're just going into the Book of Alma.
Yeah, right? I'm about halfway through.
And boy.
Well, about halfway through Alma. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's about halfway through the book, too, apparently. Like, yeah, I think the halfway point is, like, 10 chapters into Alma or something like that. So we're almost halfway through, and that book is just, it's just behemoth. Like, it's just, like you know, for a Joseph Smith drivel, it looks drivelous. So I'm really not, like, I'm, like, literally, I'm cracking that open tomorrow is when I'm going to start reading that one. And I am so not looking forward to that.
Yeah, Alma is such a long book. I want to say it's like 63 or 64 chapters, mm-hmm, or something like that. So, I mean, it is a massive part of the Book of Mormon there. Well, but, I mean, Nephi is just brutal to get through because it's all the freaking Isaiah chapters, which we all hate, and the damn olive tree.
Yeah, that was the worst. That was definitely the worst part. The part where he's talking about re-upping the. Oh, I don't even remember.
Yeah, it's just he's grafting this from the old tree to the new tree, and then the new tree to the old tree, and then this one withers, so he grafts it back here, and then it doesn't, and so he grafts it over here, and then he sighs and burns the house down or something.
Right. No, it's like watching, it's like listening to the Memento guy get deep into an analogy or something. It's so insane. That was definitely the worst moment in the book. But as I understand it, like even believing Mormons make jokes about how long and boring the Book of Alma is. So a little frightened by that one.
If I recall correctly, I believe the 2,000 stripling warriors are in the Book of Alma, and the title of Liberty, I think.
Okay.
Because there's this story, there's this whole tribe that converts to Nephite-ism. They convert to Mormonism, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they decide they are not going to fight wars anymore. So they throw all their weapons into these pits and they bury them up, and they all take this oath that they're not going to raise their weapons to anyone else ever again. Well, so then the Lamanites come and they start slaughtering them, you know, and it doesn't turn out well for them. And then their children, there are 2,000 of these young strapping men that didn't take the oath, and they said, "We will take up arms to protect you." Well, those are the 2,000 stripling warriors. And so, like, it goes and talks about how righteous they are because they were taught by their mothers and this kind of stuff. So there's some good war stuff. There's always war stuff in the Book of Mormon. That's like all it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're never more than a couple of chapters away from the Lamanites showing up to murder some people. So being so white or whatever.
Yeah. And then, I mean, this was a question that I had about part of the Book of Mormon when I was a kid, because in 3rd Nephi, that's where Jesus Christ comes and appears to the Nephites, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there was his crucifixion, and then there was the days of darkness, and there was earthquakes everywhere, and then, you know, he's resurrected, and he comes, and he appears to the Nephites. And then everybody is so righteous for 3 generations, you know, and it even says, you know, there were no poor among them, and they all lived happily, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I asked my parents, well, why weren't they translated then? If they were all living righteously, because we always hear about the city of Enoch back in the, I don't remember if that was in the Pearl of Great Price or in the Bible, but anyways, this city was so righteous that God just translated them up into heaven and they never tasted death or whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that must have been in the Pearl of the Great Price, because I can't imagine I would have passed up on that in the Bible.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember, because Pearl of Great Price and Bible is all the same to me. But anyways, it's bad. But yeah, so I was like, well, if they were living so righteously, why weren't they translated? You know, because they knew that, you know, but they were living righteously. Why weren't they? I was like, but why would God say, well, I know they're going to dwindle in unbelief and a couple generations after 100 years, so I'm not going to translate it. Well, what? But they're righteous. So, yeah, that was...
Yeah, yeah. Whatever you do, behave and make sure that 3 generations from now your children do too. Like, what about the childless ones? How about can just the childless ones get translated? Because it seems like unfair otherwise.
I don't know. Well, no, because, you know, you have to have the children to get to the celestial kingdom.
Oh, right. Yeah, I guess childless people are frowned upon just in general in Mormonism, so.
Yeah, well, think how I felt not getting married until I was 35.
Right, yeah. You're a terrible Mormon.
Yeah, well, we have the young single adult ward, right? From 18 to 30, and they send all the singles there in hopes that they'll, you know, meet their quote-unquote eternal companion, right?
Yeah.
And get married in the temple and do all that Mormon-y
stuff. Get their own planet,
you know. Yeah, you know, but, well, the women don't get the planet. The men get the planet. The women get to pop out all the spirit babies, because that's all we are, is a freaking clown car or something. I don't know. But But yeah, you know, so I mean, I got old enough that I was too old for the singles ward, and I'm like, well, yeah, so how does that make me feel? You know, I was, ugh.
I am not going to be able to pop spirit babies out on my husband's planet at all, am I? God damn it.
Well, especially not since I married a pagan, you know. So
oh, right. Yeah, he doesn't even, he's not even going to have a planet. You guys are going to be in, what, the Telestial Kingdom or whatever the hell. Belestial Kingdom. I don't know what the hell they are.
Yeah, Telestial.
Belestial sounds like a way more fun kingdom to be in, actually, when I think about it. That's...
Well, and it's funny because the way they always explain it to us was you're going to go to the kingdom in which you are most comfortable. And if you're constantly sinning and stuff, you're not going to be comfortable in the celestial kingdom where everyone's righteous because that's not your lifestyle or whatever. So I'm like, okay.
So yeah,
even
no,
if I'm wrong, even if I'm wrong and I go to the celestial kingdom, you know, I'm going to be hanging out with the rest of y'all heathens and it's going to be a freaking awesome time, right? So
yeah, I mean, if one of them has to be right about my afterlife, I want it to be the Mormons, honestly. They've got the best, like, the, you know, whatever, consolation prize, because basically it's like, you know, yeah, heaven is Utah and hell is Colorado to them. So it's like, yeah, no, I would definitely prefer hell in your world. I would definitely be more comfortable there for sure.
Well, I guess technically according to the Mormons, heaven is going to be like Missouri because that's where Zion is supposed to be. And then, I mean, it's funny because my mom used to actually, she would say stuff about like, well, you know, do you have enough food storage? And if you needed to go to Missouri, would you be able to get there?
Wow.
Yeah.
First of all, no one has ever needed to get to Missouri. All right, I've been to Missouri.
I did once. I had to go to Missouri once. Well, basic training.
Okay, all right. I was going to say, yeah, you better have been sentenced by a court, but okay, basic training.
Just,
all right.
Just about. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much.
Well, one of my drill sergeants, you know, she was a cage kicker, so she was a corrections officer, and she used to just look at us, and she's like, "Privates, the prisoners have more rights than you do," you know?
That's true, so, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it was. But, oh, geez. Yeah. That was good times right there.
It sounds like it was good. It sounds like fun. If it hadn't been for Bill fucking Clinton, maybe I would have been military too, but they wouldn't take me.
I don't know. Then they would have made you cut your hair and then you'd, I don't know, be like
I tried
and lose the strength or something, right?
Yeah, that's possible. But no, I tried. But it was under the sort of the Clinton administration. And I didn't exactly drop out of high school, but I basically dropped out of high school. I was homeschooled for like the last 3 years of high school. So basically, I missed all of it. And the recruiting office considered that the same as being a high school dropout.
Really?
Yeah. Despite the fact that I, you know, still had whatever the state certificate and still got a diploma and everything. They didn't consider that to be a legitimate high school diploma, so I was not allowed to join the military.
Wow,
it's all Bill Clinton's fault. I can only imagine, like looking back on it, it's like, yeah, I probably was not right for the military at that point in my life. It's probably a good thing, but you know, I'm still pissed.
Well, if you were left leaning at all, then, I mean, the military would be difficult because they are all so hardcore Republican.
Yeah.
Generally speaking. Like, all my coworkers, oh my gosh, I just wanted...
I found it so funny that when I was like 18, 19 and trying to figure out what to do with my life, I actually considered the military a viable option and tried to join the military and they wouldn't take me. But then many years later, under the George W. Bush regime, basically, they kept raising the age, the minimum age. So eventually I became eligible again for the military. And I was like, you know, they'd let me in now, but it's too late. I got other shit going on now, but they probably want me now that, you know, they've got somebody for me to actively be shot at by, you know?
Yeah, that was, they did a lot of expansion then. Cause I mean, well, I joined in 2001, so I shipped out to basic a month after 9/11. Actually.
Oh, wow.
It was, interesting to say the least.
I bet you had a lot of company at that exact moment. Probably one of the best moments in terms of just like military recruiting and, you know, whatever, like non-active war U.S. history.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting because, I mean, I was working at Taco Bell at the time that I recruited, you know. But there was another kid who was looking to enlist and everything, but as soon as 9/11 happened, he pulled his papers and that kind of stuff. But
oh, really?
I already had my contract and my ship out date.
Oh, so you were.
I was determined.
So. I got you. So this was not like a rallying to the colors after 9/11 thing. It just so happened to be that was your timing anyway. You were going to join up anyway.
Yeah. No. I had already gone to MAPS, and I had to go to MAPS a few times because I'd had knee surgery before I shipped out. You know, I had knee surgery like the year before, and they were trying to say, well, no. And I was like, no, but it's fine. I can run, jump, skip, hop, you know, whatever.
Do they have skipping in the military? Is that a big thing? And sometimes. Skip, 1, 2. He's getting a little hopscotch march there. That'd be awesome. Well,
I mean, they actually, a little bit, once in a while, because there's a command where you do, like, a little skip in order to change which foot you're on. Like, if you're stepping wrong with the rest of the company.
Right, right. So, yeah.
You do a little shuffle so that you're back in step. So there is a little bit of skipping.
There is skipping in the military. Okay, all right. I didn't want to come out. I didn't want to, like, come off as anti-skip. So, but I appreciate the correction. I'm a skipping ally. I don't skip myself, but not that there's anything wrong with it.
It took me so long to learn how to skip when I was a kid. I'm like the most uncoordinated thing ever. It was bad.
I had this terrible thing in childhood where all the stuff that was girly stuff was the stuff that looked like it would be the most fun. Like, you know, like a double Dutch jump rope. That looks so much fun, but you couldn't do that if you were a boy because it was a girl thing. And like baton twirling, like that really appealed to me. I was like, that looks kind of ninja-like, but it's still a girl thing. Okay, never mind. I won't do it either.
Yeah, I never had a baton, but I did have the little wavy flag thing.
Okay, yeah, there you go. See, that seemed like it could be fun-ish. Not as fun as a baton, but, you know.
I think we tried to do a little flag thing on the cheerleading team because I was 1 year. Don't judge me. When
I read tarot cards, so I'm in no position to judge anyone.
Yeah, the next year I joined the softball team, and that's when I injured my knee originally, so thus ended my softball career. But
so and really put an end to the flag corps career, too.
Yeah.
It's rough. It's rough.
Yeah, so I was like orchestra and drama club. That was me. It was good times though. But yeah, it was just funny all the cognitive dissonance that I had to go through because I was always really good at science and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's completely opposite of churchy stuff. So.
Yeah, it always strikes me as awkward to think of all these poor kids that, you know, even somebody who is like just as ephemerally braised with religion as I was. But boy, that was a terrible turn of phrase there. Sorry about that. It's been a long day. It's been a long day. Normally I script my stuff out. I had a little tiny glazing of religion, and even that was enough for me to go like, wait, this doesn't make any fucking sense. Right, because the satellites and the Hubble and stuff are taking pictures. I mean, we didn't have a Hubble back then, but you know, we had the Voyager crafts and stuff like that. It's like, how far until they get to heaven? Well, not ever, never. They will never, because that's not a place. But you know, as a kid, you're trying to sort that out because you don't know the difference between one authority that is something that you should take seriously and another authority that's just like, yeah, this is what we tell ourselves so that we won't be sad when the goldfish dies, you know. And so as a kid, you're trying to like reconcile all of that stuff, and there's no way to make any of it make sense. And of course, like I said, that was with just, you know, I remember feeling that way with just the ever so slight brushing of religion. And I can only imagine if you're like really inured in this stuff and you have to like try to pick out what's the true stuff and what's the bullshit stuff as a kid, that's got to be super difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I always had these two compartments that I put everything in, you know, because you'd be watching, like, Star Trek or, you know, one of these science shows or even in science class and everything, and them saying, well, it's so many millions of years old. But then, you know, I was like, well, but it's...
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up very literal new earthy. I could have worked at the Ark Park, you know, but...
I don't think they would hire a Mormon. I don't...
Yeah, maybe not. But I was like, well, I do the whole New Earth thing. At least I did, you know. But I always just had these two compartments that I would put in. And, I mean, I'm still shocked at the cognitive dissonance that I had, that I completely was able to separate the two and not think anything of it. And, like, when I went off to college, my dad gave me a blessing and all this kind of stuff. And he was like, well... You know, you're going to encounter a lot of stuff while you're here, and you will know what is true and what is not. And that was his code word of, you know, you're going to reject the parts of science mm-hmm. that aren't true, which is really funny coming from a man who minored in physics and had his astronomy notebook stolen because he, like, scored so well on everything that the professor couldn't even use him as part of the bell curve because it would throw the whole thing off. So
Well, you know, that's the thing. I guess the compartmentalization is the way that you got through it. But the thing is that you can't be upfront about it, right? Because that's one of those things that falls apart as soon as you start thinking about it. So you constantly see this situation where, like, the kid is not allowed to yet know how to compartmentalize, or that they need to, right? And you can't explain that to the kid. You can't say, yeah, what we learned on Sunday, that goes in a special basket. When I was on vacation, I ended up having dinner with a couple of the guys from Atheists on High, and Skeptic Brett says something that I think a lot of, you know, people raised religious would you know, be able to sympathize with. It was like, in school, I was encouraged to ask questions. I was rewarded for asking good questions. If I figured out the thing in school in the lesson that didn't add up, the teacher would say, very good job, you know, and here's the answer to your question. But then you go to church, you go to Sunday school, and all of a sudden every question that you ask is, like, discouraged and it's stomped on, and you're made to feel like a bad person for having asked it. And it's, you know, so I guess, like, kids learn to compartmentalize that way because it's a survival, it's like an intellectual survival instinct for them, or a disciplinary survival instinct for them. But that's an awfully complicated series of things to ask a 7-year-old brain to puzzle out.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first moment that I realized I had to start compartmentalizing it all, because we had, you know, one of these little school presentations, and it was this archaeologist or something that came in with some fossils and this kind of stuff. And I remember he was talking about, yeah, and the raptors that were, you know, some of these dinosaurs, and then they started doing this and putting their arms out, and next thing you know, they were getting their feathers and they were flying, and then now they're these hawks and kind of stuff, you know. Mm. Basically telling this, you know, more of a, I mean, easier for a child to understand than just basic evolution and explaining it all technical. Like, he turned it into a story, and I was like, wow, that's really cool, you know. And I come home and I tell my mom this story, and she's like, no, that's not right. That's not how it, and, oh, and so, like, and I was in, like, I don't know, first grade, second grade, something like that, when I realized I had to compartmentalize science-y stuff at school and church stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's always, you know, it was a good rule of thumb that I think I learned early on, is that the people who get mad at you for asking questions are full of shit. You know, I mean, like, you know, granted, if you're enough of a smartass, you can get anybody pissed off at you just by asking questions, but you kind of know you're trying when you're doing that. But if you're asking legitimate, like, this doesn't add up type questions, and people are getting angry, it's usually because they're lying to you.
Yeah.
And if they're really, really angry, it's usually because they're lying to themselves.
You can't see it, but I'm nodding over here. I feel like I have so much catching up to do with the real world since I was wrapped up in this stuff for 35 years and I've only been getting away from it for not even a year now. So.
Yeah. No, I believe me, I understand. Like, I am pissed off at the clock for refusing to spin backwards and letting me start over again, only this time without the bullshit. And, you know, that's coming from a person who sort of started moving into this, you know, whatever. I think it was like 28, 29 when I kind of got out of all the nonsense. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't for like several more years that I started to get really interested in science and, you know, really started to like embrace the concept of atheism rather than just being a non-religious nun, but actually becoming sort of like a person that would identify as atheist. It's been whatever, 6-7 years for me. Well, I guess a little bit longer than that, but not by much. And every day of it, I'm just like, God damn it. Where was I when all this information was being discovered? You know, where was I when, like, you know, the government would have subsidized me learning all of this stuff that now I just pay to learn on my own?
Yeah, I so wish that I had stuck with college and, like, got my sciencey degree in this kind of stuff. Because, I mean, I'm so fascinated by this stuff and I just want to learn it all. And I'm like, I don't have the budget to to go and learn it all right now.
Well, and you know, no matter what, you never have the time to. That, like, I live in this constant state of anger at all the information I will never be able to fit into my head. You know, because like everything that I take an interest in, if you take an interest in something, you start learning about it. The first thing you learn is just how little you knew about it, right? You know, you think to yourself, like, you hear a bunch of stuff that, you know, makes you a little bit more curious to learn the basics of physics, right? You're like, I want to understand X. So in order to understand X, I'm going to need to understand physics better. So you go to learn a little bit more about physics. And then you realize that, like, what you're actually learning about are the 27 different subfields of physics, each one of which is way more complicated than you could have possibly imagined to be, each one of which is fascinating and has another 75 subjects of its own that you could spend a lifetime learning about. You know, I'm literally pissed off at mortality most because there's more knowledge and information than there is time.
Oh yeah, I absolutely know that feeling because I'm always wanting to pick up all these other bits and pieces, and I'm like, I want to learn more about geology because I absolutely love Yellowstone and I want to learn all the stuff about it. And then, you know, like I said, I read The Origin of Species, and now I'm like, I want to learn everything about the evolutionary biology stuff. And
No, my wife and I were in Colorado the other day, and I'm the science-y dork, and so she expects me to know this kind of stuff. She's so, like, we're driving through a red rock formation. She's like, it's so weird. The rocks right over here are red, but these ones real close by are white. Why is that, you think? And, like, I'm like, shit, I know. Man, I know this. Hold on, wait. I've heard this once. I've read this before. I know why, but I can't explain. God damn it. And then I'm like, oh yeah, no, I guess I gotta go back to the like basics of geology and learn them again because they've slipped my mind as I went on and learned other stuff that took my interest since the last time I took a hankering towards geology. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the red rocks there in Colorado are a sandstone and stuff. So I grew up in the Denver area. So,
oh, right on.
Did you
right
go down to like the Colorado Springs area?
Yeah, like Garden of the Gods.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's
some beautiful country down there.
Yeah, no, it's just amazing. Well, everywhere up there is just beautiful. Everywhere on the I guess you can get far enough east in the state where it's just boring, and it's practically Kansas. But basically anything near the mountains there is absolutely gorgeous.
Pretty much everything east of I-25 is pre-Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
On the other side is mountains and gorgeous. So. That's my home state, but
I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to wind up my home state about the time my lease runs up at Secret Lair. I think Lucinda's just like kind of going to put her foot down and say, no, we're going to live there. It's gorgeous, and they have the right laws. They don't want to throw me in jail as much as a lot of the other states seem to. So, Cory Booker 2020.
Another reason why you can't join the military.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that would have been problematic.
Because they ask you if you've ever used that, and I guess ever? If you answer, yeah, they say, well, you know, have you ever used any illegal drugs and stuff? And if your answer is more than, like, just a time or two, they seriously consider just not even accepting you.
Well, at least they're willing to accept a time or two.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, they know a lot of teenagers, you know, they'll go and they'll freaking experiment. And they know most of them are lying when they say, yeah, twice, you know. Yeah,
right, but, right. But they want somebody who at least is willing to lie to them about it that to that extent. Yeah, I guess I get that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have that problem because I was Mormon. So, you know, I didn't even.
I was like, yeah, I haven't even tried caffeine, guys.
Yeah. No, true story. But, oh, it was quite a sad life, but, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, honestly, like, on sort of a serious note, coming off of, you know, like, a joke there, but, like, that is my primary motivating factor these days. Like, the primary thing that drives me every day in my job is thinking about the years that have been stolen from people. You know, the years that were stolen from me, but also, like, you know, the 35 years that were stolen from you. And not just that, but, like, what if you had gone and gotten a degree in, like, organic brain chemistry and cured some disease instead of, like, you know, being Mormon? You know, because like they really do put those two things in opposition. I mean, I saw a thing recently that said that the majority of Christian evangelicals think that going to college is an overall, like, a net negative.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm just like, are you kidding me?
And it's by a wide margin. It's not like 51%. It's in, I wanted to say it was in the 60s, but even with just Republicans in general now, it's in the majority. So you know,
and it's. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's just so disturbing to me that people are asked to choose between knowledge and any other thing.
Yeah, and, like, Mormons are funny because they like to brag that, you know, even when they go to school and they get more educated, unlike all these other Christian sects, that when they get more educated, they move away from religion. Like, Mormons stay religious even when they get educated and blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't believe that anymore.
Well, because they're counting.
That wasn't my experience.
Well, yeah, because they're counting fucking Oral Roberts University.
Brigham Young.
Brigham Young. Brigham Young University. Yeah, because they're counting BYU. If they count BYU, well, then of course. You know, I'm sure that Catholics who go to Catholic schools stay Catholic despite their levels of education.
My dad and my sister's alma mater.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, deep in it. Deep in it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm telling you, like, you don't have to look any further than my family to find, like, hardcore, true-believing Mormon. It was quite an interesting childhood.
Yeah, I feel like when Mormons say interesting childhood, they mean something different than what the rest of the people say when they say interesting childhood. But yeah,
it's probably, you know, I mean, because I feel like just it was all very, I want to say boring, you know.
Yeah,
so bad, but it's. But I mean, it's like you look back on it and you're like, I believed what? You know, I mean, because like I said, we were so fundamental about it. I mean, I dated a guy in England and I was actually engaged to him. I was planning to marry him, but I found out he believed evolution and he wanted to, you know, raise our kids that they were, you know, descended from monkeys, and I was having none of that, and I broke up with him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And as I went through this, I was like, where would I be if I don't know, didn't have such a freaking Mormon stick up my ass when that was going on? I mean, because your perspective changes so much.
Well, and you know, there's this sort of continuity of self, this illusion of continuity of self that we have that demands that we connect the person we are now to the person that we were when we were 17, to the person we were when we were 21. And we draw all of these like tenuous connections between those, right? But when it comes right down to it, you are, well, you know, not to get all Zen Buddhist on you or whatever, but you are no more the same self that you were at 16 as, you know, the river is the same water that it was 20 years ago, right? So, yeah. But it's people who have gone, I feel like only people who have gone, or maybe not only, maybe that's too strong a term. The only place I've ever seen this anyway, this thing that I'm about to eventually, after I stop qualifying and explain, this feeling that, right, or this stark ability to look at continuity of self and call bullshit on it, right? Because you want to believe when you look back in your history, like when I look back in my history and I look at the times that I was like really obsessed with tarot cards, my first instinct is to say, yeah, but I knew it was bullshit back then, didn't I? I probably did. Knowing me, I probably did. And I didn't. You know, there's no fucking way I would have spent that much time and effort on something that if I had the slightest inkling of what a bunch of bullshit it really was, right? So you want to try to tell yourself, no, I couldn't have believed that, could I? But your actual experience tells you completely different. So I think like there's a way that like, and I think people who made any type of serious conversion, whether it's like a serious political conversion or a serious religious conversion or whatever it is, that have to be able to say, you know, like, wow, I am a completely different person than I was, or in so many ways, a different person than I was at the age of 18. And everybody is just as much a different person than they were, you know, 15 years ago, 18, whatever, you know, however the hell old that person is. But it's something, it's an illusion that only gets shattered for you if you make a huge change, like a huge intellectual change in your life, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, I'm like, I would not be the person I am now, you know? So trying to measure the good with the bad, but I feel like, well, at least I got out mostly unscathed.
Right, yeah.
Mostly, I guess.
Could be a lot worse. I mean, you know, I met a listener to the show that didn't lose his faith until he was, I want to say he was just shy of 50 or just over 50. And just like, you know, whole new universes were open up to him. And you know, he says to me, kind of like expressing the same thing that you were saying, or that we were both saying earlier about, you know, oh man, all that time I wasted and you know, like, you must think me an idiot for taking so long to, you know, to recognize what was being said. And I'm like, you know, more than like taking you for an idiot, I take for you for incredibly courageous to be able to look at what you've believed and what you've been committed to and what you've been dedicated to for 50 years and say, God, this has all been bullshit. You know, like how much intellectual courage does it take to do that? I don't know. Cause you know, like I said, I was like half ass into some shit when I was 21 and got out of it by the time I was 25 and no one was really pushing me on. And I didn't have to fight with my family about it. And I didn't have to have a coming out moment or anything like that along my way. It was really easy for me, but for somebody like yourself that for 35 years was wrapped up in this shit and whose identity was wrapped up in it, right? Like who thought of themselves, at least to some degree in terms of their religion. For a person like that to like step away from it and say, wow, I was engaged in a load of shit. That, you know, if nothing else, it's incredibly courageous.
I mean, I still feel like such a coward because I can't tell my family I don't have the balls to do that. But like my two of my sisters, the two that have left the church, they know that I've left the church as well, but they don't know why. You know, but they're not questioning because they're each going on their own stuff at the time, too, so.
Right.
And I'm just like, well, I'm glad they're not asking because I don't know how to sit there and tell them, yeah, well, I think y'all are still completely full of crap because, what? But
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, obviously I can't speak to your personal situation, but I know a lot of people make a big deal of like telling your family and telling your friends and being open about, and I think that's important, right? For those of us who can or who aren't going to like ruin relationships, I think it is important, but it's also important that we keep in mind that just the fact that you're able to admit it to yourself puts you so far ahead of so many people. Because like really, honestly, how many of the people in church, right? How many people sitting in temple or whatever are sitting there looking at it going like, this is such a load of shit without even admitting that to themselves? Yeah, so
no one knows.
Right, you right. Know? Yeah, no, it's an impossible thing to know.
They keep playing paying lip service to it. They show up because that's what they're supposed to do. And I went through those phases, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right, right. And I like to think it's the majority. I like to think that, you know, like, I don't know, maybe that's wishful thinking, maybe that's just hopeful. But I have a sneaking suspicion that anyone who's had to compartmentalize away the truth from their religion on some level knows their religion is not true, right? I mean, it's almost definitionally so. So I often wonder about that. I know David Silverman's made a lot of comments about that and trying to like sort of like, you know, pin down how big a number is that. And he's made the claim that virtually everyone in church feels that way. And I don't know that that's wrong. That honestly strikes me as easier to believe than that these people really believe this shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for other religions, but I really fear that with Mormonism, the most of them are still, like, if they're the ones that go to church every week, they're pretty, pretty devoted and hardcore to it. So
I can't remember where I read it, but I apologize to whoever's attribution I'm missing here. But I always kind of reflect back on the fact that the things that you know are true, that you truly know are true, right? That aren't in some special category of true for you, are things that you hear once and you're done. No one has ever had to come back to me and explain, you know, atomic theory to me. I don't have to go once a week to learn about evolution so that I'll still believe in it. If you're going to something once, like on a weekly basis to be reminded of it, it's because you need to go once a week because it'd take 8 days for you to talk yourself out of that shit. You know, like the most dedicated physicist in the world doesn't keep a physics journal next to his bedside table or on his bedside table as he goes to bed and read lovingly certain passages to get him through the day. Right. It's true. So, you know, he's got that book somewhere. He's got it for reference and whatnot. But you only go back again and again and again for shit that needs to be reinforced with or it'll fall off. Again, maybe that's just my wishful thinking. Maybe I just want to imbue the average human with more intellectual prowess than they actually have, or maybe I just underestimate indoctrination because I haven't really been through it to that degree. But I've always kind of felt like that. Like, if you really believed it, would you even have to go to church?
I like that, because that means that because the Mormon church is full of even more crap, that's why we go so often and
yeah.
We go during the week and we've got a 3-hour
right.
block and...
Right, yeah, the Baptists all go on Wednesday afternoon. It's like, oh, you guys are twice as full of shit as the Catholics. Gotcha.
Well, yeah, and okay, let's break it down for the Mormons. We've got a 3-hour church block on Sunday, mm-hmm. right? And then Monday nights, I mean, you don't go to church, but you've got family home evening where you sit down and do some church something with your family there. And then, like, as the youth and stuff, you've got the mutual night and scouts and young women's or whatever on Wednesday night. And then you sometimes have stuff on the weekend. And during high school, every day before school, unless you happen to live in a very Mormon dense area where you get release time, you get seminary. So you've got an hour long class that's scripture study for 4 years. So, and mine was early morning, so it started at 5:45.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Go to the church at 5:45 every day before school, and each year is dedicated to a different part of the scriptures. So, 1 year was Old Testament, 1 year was New Testament, 1 year was Book of Mormon, and 1 year was the Doctrine and Covenants and Pearl of Great Price. So.
Wow. No, but I think we might really be onto something, because if I'm doing my math correctly, that would mean that Mormons are about 8.5 times as full of shit as Methodists. And that seems about right, you know?
Could be. Let's write a paper, get it.
Yeah, paper right. Here. The bullshitometer here or something. Yeah.
I wonder if there's some kind of meter that we can get, kind of like the ghost hunters have, and just
yeah, right, exactly. We just go into a church and say, "You guys are full of shit to a 7. That's 7. That's really BS high."
Detector. It'll
yeah,
it'll be like the radiation detectors, and just start making little Geiger counter noises and stuff as we take the
road. Yeah, for no reason, you know, like a slide whistle occasionally goes off. I like a visual that he threw out the other day, just carrying around a theremin. And I was like, oh, got some strong readings near all the walls for some reason. All of them.
Oh, my gosh. That's a great idea. And I also like the idea of ending the episode while we're laughing and not all depressed. Like one of my last episodes that I did where we ended talking about the horrible orange thing that's ruining the country, but we're not talking about him, so.
No, but I will say, you know, he's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that means he's, I think, 34 times as full of shit as the Methodists, so just by this scale. I'll have to do the math. I'll get back to you.
Yeah, and also more than the Mormons.
Yeah, so. No, even more full of shit than Mormonism. That could be that's his 2020 slogan right there.
Oh, no. Okay, sorry. Since we brought him up for a second, just one last little thing, because I was scrolling the Facebooks and I saw this meme, and it's going through and it's talking about, you know, some person that's, you know, misogynistic and this and this, and it has all these horrible negative qualities. And as I'm reading them, I thought that it was like an anti-Trump meme, but it was talking about the God of the Old Testament. I'm like, oh.
You're going, oh, right. I should have known, because Donald Trump didn't kill horses. That we know of. He hasn't killed any horses yet. He's not filicidal. I had everything else.
As of yet, he has not sent bears to kill children yet, either.
That we know of. Let's qualify this shit. Like, because if we found that out tomorrow, right, if that was the next Washington Post scoop, as they came out and said, yeah, he also, some kids were making fun of his hair, so he released a few bears. Putin apparently loaned them to him. He said, these are my baldness bears. You know, we wouldn't be 100... Wouldn't be all that surprised.
That's the bears they were talking about that are going to be in the schools.
Yeah. Maybe Betsy DeVos is a little smarter than she looks.
Probably not.
No. Couldn't be any dumber than she looks, but I don't think she's any smarter either.
That's crazy talk right there.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
So if someone, I don't know why, but if they haven't heard of you and your, like, you know, little shows that you've got everywhere, where can they find you?
Best bet is just to Google Scathing Atheist, and you'll find our website, and you'll find our social media, and you'll find our podcast. And then if you're just looking for more podcasts to throw in your archives, we also have God Awful Movies, The Skeptocrat, and our brand new show, Citation Needed.
Yes, I absolutely love that one. It just kills me every time. That and just one last quick question. Like, how do you guys decide which Wikipedia article you're going to do for that?
Well, it's a rotating host thing, right? So, like, each of us picks our own topic. And so everybody's got sort of their own way of doing it. My way is honestly, like, I was joking around with Tom, and he's like, yeah, well, you know, I'm having trouble coming up with an interesting article. I'm like, I don't even worry about coming up with interesting articles. I figure whatever boring shit I come up with, you guys will make it funny. And so now my goal is to find, like, the most boring subject that we can still make funny.
Is that why you picked the new coat?
Yes, yeah, exactly. That was the first volley in that. And now, like, that's probably a bad idea, and I probably shouldn't, like, intentionally pick boring topics and everything. But the new Coke one worked out really well, I thought, so.
I have thoroughly enjoyed everyone, especially, you know, since moving to Pennsylvania, the Centralia one. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had no idea how close I was to Centralia when we did that. I was like, shit, I should have drove out there, you know? Got a quick look at it.
Yeah, and the crazy thing was, because I saw a TV special on that one, was like, at one point, they almost had it contained, and they ran out of money, and they only needed, like, one more day and $500 more.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Insignificant like that. It was just a little bit, and they would have had it contained. But they had to go back through the bureaucratic bullcrap in order to get the money.
Ouch.
And by then, it just ballooned and was like several hundreds of thousands. And so they're like, eh.
It's
this state is something else.
Yeah, it's quite a symbol. This state is a great symbol of like environmental neglect. Right. You know, because it was sort of the first state where they started finding oil and obviously it was one of the first big coal states and everything. This state is a really, really good model for environmental neglect in a lot of ways. And having Centralia as sort of the capstone of all of that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that and some of these laws are still so freaking bass-ackwards. It's just ridiculous. Like the state stores for any sort of alcohol and that kind of stuff. And because, I mean, I lived in Texas before I came here, so you could get your beer and your wine and everything like that. I mean, short of hard liquor, you could get everything at the regular grocery store. Then I move here and you can't even get it at a convenience store. You have to, like, go to the actual state store or to a restaurant, and you can only get one 6-pack or some crap like that. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
What the hell kind of freaking sense does that make? So, yeah, I don't know. This state doesn't make sense to me sometimes, but...
Yeah, you know. Hell with it. I'm going to Colorado.
I miss that state, but...
I do, yeah. Too, and I've only been gone for like 5 days, so, yeah.
Good times. Well, again, thank you for coming on. It has been a blast, and, yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime.
Sounds great. Well, thanks again for the invite.
Hopefully one of us can join us next time, so.
Yeah, right. Like I said, a little lazy, only on 3.5 shows this week, Riz. We're keeping track. We're counting. Love you, Riz.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, thank you, Noah, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
First, I'd like to thank Noah again for coming on the show and for being so kind through all my blonde moments. It was awesome having this conversation with him, even though I was super nervous the entire time. Second, a huge thanks to the patrons, especially to our newest patron, Greg, whose altruism astounds me. If you want to help out the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/doubtingdogma and pledge as little as $1 per episode to gain early access to episodes and patron-only content. If you can't do that, please rate us on iTunes or follow the show on Twitter @DoubtingDogma or Facebook.com/DoubtingDogma. Or if you just want to read some of my thoughts as I've moved through my deconversion, you can read them at DoubtingDogmaBlog.wordpress.com. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.